Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are and should be proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with Elaine Donnelly from CMR. Then Terry Lanning will present a military song, and Diane Raver will review the movie of the month. Okay, welcome back to the show, Elaine. I'm glad you could join us. You do a lot for our military team. You really do.
Well, the military is a very unique institution. It is subject to civilian control. That means that the members of Congress, if their bent is not totally in support of national defense the way it should be, the military can be harmed. There's some policies that have been put in place. Historically, when I formed CMR back in 1993, that was the Clinton administration. It started out with his big push for gays in the military. There was also women in combat that we've been working on for many years. And now we have, we've had issues of sexual assault. We've had the outgrowth of the two previous policies. Now we're talking about wokeism in the military, which is the same thing as political correctness, with the added feature that woke policies actually hurt the institution. So we've been pretty busy. Our agenda is quite wide. And we do it because civilians, I think, have a responsibility through our elected representatives to make sure that if we send people off to fight and defend America, that they are doing so under leaders who are trustworthy, the best leaders that can be had, sound policies that don't put their life at risk unnecessarily. Those are the kinds of things and the issues that we deal with all the time.
And, well, you should. And yes, our military should be under the control of the civilians, not the other way around.
Right.
You know, too many presidents and prime ministers have been overthrown by the military in, heck, most of the other 200 countries in the world. So that's good, but it's the best possible situation. But we, the people, have got to make sure it works right. And I think that's the point you're saying.
Right. With the power comes the responsibility. The power of the Congress to make policy for the military is rooted in the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8. The power to raise armies and navies and things like that, it's right there in the Constitution. And we cannot rely on courts to correct mistakes that are made along the way. Sometimes the courts get involved, but rarely, because the courts are not suited to make policy for the military. They quite often defer to the armed forces and its civilian leadership. Ultimately, Congress has to do the right thing. And that brings us to what's pending right now, the defense bill. Every year, there is a big fat bill, hundreds of pages, that makes policy for our military, a separate bill that appropriates funds. And it's a very important bill. And there's a whole section in there that deals with military social issues. And that's where we come in. We don't get into the hardware and the veterans issues and things like that. There's a lot of good things in there about that. We deal with the social issues that have to do with the kind of lives that people live in the military. We don't want to make those lives more difficult or more dangerous. So right now, the House has already passed their bill. The Senate is in committee only behind closed doors. The House has got a lot of good amendments in there to deal with wokeism in the military, to roll a lot of it back. But on the Senate side, they have an amendment that says, draft our daughters. We're going to register young women with selective service. That's an issue that has come up before. It's always been defeated, and for good reason, but it's come up again. We don't know about the other things in the bill because it's not made public yet. Won't be until first week of July or so.
Yeah. You know, one of the things about the women in the military, which you and I have discussed before, is the biggest need for people in our military is in the infantry. So when you see young gals out playing, is that where they should end up? If they're drafted, that's where most of them are going to go, because that's where most of everybody goes.
Right.
So, and I don't know if it's appropriate to say this or not, Elaine, but there's a difference between men and women, right?
What a shocking concept.
But it is.
True. I mean, when people look at this and sometimes they say, well, if it's only fair, if you want to vote, then that means you should be in the military. Well, there is a difference. So there's a lot of reasons why men and women are not interchangeable in the combat arms. Now, women serve very well in our military. They do all kinds of things. They're indispensable in many areas of military life. They have proven themselves as sound people in the military. We're very proud of them. But the combat arms, those are the forces that attack the enemy. Talking about infantry, special forces, and the like, artillery, armor, the kinds of units that if we got into a national emergency, that's where you would need to have what are called combat replacements. Now, if you're talking about combat replacements, treating women the same as men would really jam up the system. If you called up 50-50 men, 50-50 women, and only a tiny number of women were really qualified, what you would do is totally jam up the system. That would hurt mobilization readiness at the worst possible time. There's no excuse for doing this. So that's the kind of issue it shouldn't be looked at as a man-woman kind of thing. You always have some resentful men who come up and say, well, I think we need to have women bleed in equal numbers with men. And they say so with an edge of meanness to their voice. They want to hurt and punish women. There's no place for that in making policy for the armed forces. You don't do anything unless it's going to make our military more ready, have high morale, well-trained. You don't introduce things like critical race theory instructions, diversity, equity, inclusion mandates. You don't do things like that because all of that detracts from readiness and morale. And Congress is working to get rid of some of that, a lot of it.
I hope so. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Elaine Donnelly from the Center for Military Readiness. You know, one of the key things, I've led rifle platoons and rifle companies in combat, and we all needed to look at each other. But if in my unit there were 10 people, 4 gals and 6 guys, and one of the guys likes 2 of the girls and 2 of the girls don't like any guys, and that kind of internal strife, and our lives depend on each other, and that does happen when young men and women are together, doesn't it?
It does, because people are human. And things don't always go according to regulation. People relate to each other, sometimes in professional ways, sometimes unprofessional ways. If you think about a spectrum where you have romantic relationships on one side or hostility on the other end, all of these things complicate military life. And when you get into accusations of abuse or real abuse, everybody gets all upset because those things are very divisive. The numbers of sexual harassment cases, actual cases, keeps going up every year. And it's something that the military is struggling with. If you had, again, pressures to have equal numbers of men and women, even in the support positions, all of that would make life more difficult and more dangerous. And
yes.
We can't afford to do that.
Yeah. Now, the one exception to all of this, as far as close combat, is pilots. Women have proven to be very good flying combat support, whether it's helicopters or attack aircraft.
I wouldn't say it's an exception. The reason is that sometimes aircraft get shut down.
Yes.
And prisoners of war, that was one of the major issues the presidential commission looked at when we studied the issue of women in combat in 1992.
Yep. And that's something that has to be considered too.
Yes. We've been fortunate. So far, we haven't had a female captive in a long time. When women have been captured behind enemy lines, it has not been pretty. But in the recent wars, we haven't seen that, but it is a factor to be considered. Is this something we really need to do? It is part of the risk. And yes, everybody in the military is subject to that risk, but we don't need to make it worse.
Very, very well put. Okay. There's a lot more we could talk about, but we're sort of running out of time. Talk about the Center for Military Readiness, how people can plug into it, what you offer them, what you could lead them into doing.
Well, we do a lot of original research and writing and analysis of the military social issues. So if you go to cmrlink.org, there's a new featured article, just posted it yesterday, about the NDAA, the good parts, the bad parts, what people can do, the phone calls that they can make if they want their members of Congress to be against Draft Our Daughters, to make sure that doesn't get in the law. There's a lot of good information there, and that's what we do. We're a public policy organization, 501c3, contributions are tax deductible. And right now, if people who send $150, we will send a copy of Pete Hegseth's best-selling book, The War on Warriors. Pete Hegseth is a longtime friend, and he's done a great job with this book, and it's at the top of the New York Times list. And it's one that, if you're interested in the subject, that's one, it's a must read. So if you make a contribution to CMR and you get the book, you do two things that are good at once.
Well said. And I totally support the Center for Military Readiness, CMR. Thank you, Elaine. Thank you for your never-ending support for our nation and for joining us today. I'm glad we're friends.
Okay. Thank you, Denny.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Time to do some knee bends. Go halfway down each time. Do 40. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
Veterans have a unique perspective on healthcare, foreign policy, and federal spending.
Concerned Veterans for America provides veterans and the military community a chance to share that perspective and drive change that will make Americans safer and more prosperous.
Want to join the movement and the thousands of activists in our grassroots army? Visit cvafrontlines.com to learn more and join the movement. That's cvafrontlines.com.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. It's a pleasure to introduce and welcome Terry Landon to the show. Terry's a Navy vet, and he's proposing a new song, which could become our nation's military song and national song. Welcome, Terry. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Terry, start by talking about your time. When and why did you join the Navy, and where did you serve? And
I served on the USS Saratoga. It's an aircraft carrier with 5,000 other guys. I spent a year in Mayport, Florida, a year in Dabneck, Virginia, a year in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and I made two tours of the Mediterranean Sea on the aircraft carrier USS Saratoga.
Okay, with 5,000 other guys, are you still in touch with all of them? Of course not. I'm just being smart. Okay. What was your job in the Navy?
My job was a mail yeoman, a typist. I worked in an office with four officers and probably 250 enlisted men in our division.
Okay. So obviously you enjoyed your time in the service because you're still focused on things military. Tell us the story of how this idea of a national song came up.
I first heard this song in 2019 at a military concert representing our veterans. It was an outdoor concert, and this gentleman sang this song, Blades of Grass and Pure White Stones. And that's why I'm trying to get this to be a national song for all our veterans.
Okay, so this is something you heard that just appealed to you, and you wanted to do more than just like it. You wanted to move it forward. Am I reading you right?
That is correct.
So your concept now is that would be a good national song. Obviously, the Army's got their song and the Navy's got their songs, and that's all good. But this would be a really good national song, correct? That's where we're going?
That's correct.
Folks, to hear this wonderful song, go to YouTube and type in the title, Blades of Grass and Pure White Stones. Blades of Grass and Pure White Stones. Then you can listen to the song and enjoy it.
Correct. And the Mormon Tabernacle Choir has a video of the song.
Okay, that works. And it's certainly patriotic and something that we can all stand together. What would you like our listeners to do to assist you in getting this moved forward?
Well, I have a petition on change.org, Terry Lanning. The petition will say Blades of Grass and Pure White Stones, the national song for all American veterans. And since April of 2023, I have 3,331 signatures signed on.
Okay, that certainly makes sense. So they can listen to it as often as they want, and they can go to change.org slash Terry Lanning?
Correct.
Okay. So, folks, if this is something you'd like to get involved with, change.org/Terry, T-E-R-R-Y, Lanning, L-A-N-N-I-N-G. An amazing song. Thank you, Terry, for what you're doing.
I was reading an article, and back in 2015, the Department of Defense started looking for veterans. It's called DPAA, Defense POW MIA Accounting Defense. They're looking for 81,500 missing veterans that died during the war, but they don't know where they are. And this song would honor all our veterans, living or dead. It wouldn't cost anything for Congress to make this a reality. It doesn't cost us anything. It's important to honor our veterans. I met with a Gold Star mother, and why would not everyone, every American, every veteran, honor our veterans with their own national song? That's the least we can do for everything they've done for us. They kept our country safe for 248 years coming this 4th of July.
Terry, that's a really great point. Thank you for that and for this great song.
Thank you very much for listening.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival will review the movie of the month and we'll open our weekly mailbag. Groups, I hope you're giving serious thought to buying gold and silver to keep your future more secure. Check out Universal Coin. That's where I go, universalcoin.com/Denny. Check universalcoin.com/Denny. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for the one-arm push-ups. I want you to do a dozen with each arm twice, then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back.
Fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
HelpVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HelpVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HelpVet.net. Visit HelpVet.net for all your family's needs.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Dennis Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. And now it's time for the movie of the month. So, of course, we're joined by our great team member, Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival. Welcome, Diane. Glad to have you with us yet again.
Thank you, Denny. Of course, it's always an honor and a privilege to be on the show. I hope everyone enjoyed this month's little short film. I thought it would be a great addition to the fact that all humans have some of the same things that happen in their lives.
Well, that's true. You have an interesting, well, you run the Garden State Film Festival, basically, so you have access to all kinds of interesting films. But this one, it's short and it's funny and there is a message there. So therefore, yeah, it was really appropriate. So it's The Elevator. You know, what can be funny, cool, or interesting about an elevator? Well, it depends.
I worked in New York. Things like this did actually happen. So, you know,
I'm used to getting on an elevator, and sometimes I'm alone, sometimes there's two or three people, sometimes it's full. But the elevator goes where it's supposed to go. People get off. Eventually, I get off. It's not a big deal. but it can be. And this, this certainly talks about it. So we've got this guy, young man, I don't know, looked like might be in his 30s or something like that.
Yeah, I would say.
And he pushes the button for the elevator. Normal thing. Door opens. Normal thing. He gets in. He wants to go, I think, to the 9th floor. Pushes the button. And that's when things, well, it stops at the 2nd floor. Well, that's appropriate. Other people want to go up too. You're not the only one. But I guess he sort of liked being alone, but he suddenly wasn't. And all of a sudden, several people get in.
Very large people get in.
Yes. And this guy is a fairly slim guy. But there's now like 4 or 5 of them on. Well, then it stops on the 3rd floor. And 4 more people get in, including one very big guy. Well, apparently our young hero is aware of some sign somewhere in the elevator that says the maximum weight capability of this thing to lift. So he starts guesstimating the weight of all the people in there. And he's got his cell phone out, I guess.
His calculator.
And he's adding up numbers. And so all of a sudden the numbers go up from 3, 4, 500 to over 2,000. I don't remember what the maximum number on the
It was 2001 on his calculator, and the thing said 2,000, and that's when it dropped.
Okay. And yeah, the elevator now is at or moving towards the 4th floor, but all of a sudden, boom, it drops down to about 1 again, which is, I've never had that happen, and hopefully I never in my life will have that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then it starts going back up again, normally, which seems okay.
He bails. He wants to get out.
I think some other guys get in, and they only want to go up like a couple of floors, but they all start coughing.
Oh, no. No. He gets out when the more large people get on.
Oh, that's right.
Another elevator.
That's right. He got out first when a big guy got on in his place.
Yeah.
And sort of pushed on him as he got out. So he presses another button and he gets on, and there's half a dozen people on it.
Yeah, but they're all relatively smaller people.
Yeah, they're nowhere near the upper limit. And as soon as the doors close, they all start coughing. So he's sort of out of the frying pan into the fire. Is that a fair
estimation? Yeah, that would be fair estimation, yeah.
And he's clearly not pleased. He sort of submerges into his coat jacket or his coat collar down and everything. And a couple of floors up, all these people get out. And he's glad. And he happens to look through the open door at the sign right outside the elevator, which says, swine flu treatment. In this direction. And that is the end of it, except for the interesting look on his face.
I hope the viewers enjoyed it as much as I did.
Well, to make an understatement, if you can find that humorous, if nothing else, because it's not you having to go through it.
Exactly. I think that tells more about me than it does about anybody else.
But one also wonders about what goes on in the brain of somebody who'd make that movie.
Well, there's that.
But, you know, I've always said sane people are boring. Crazy people are fun to be around.
Amen.
So those are the kinds of people that make these kind of movies, because I had to go back and watch this a second time. The first time, I almost didn't believe what I was seeing. And then I did believe everything I was seeing and was fully entertained. That's just beyond well, it's not beyond you. You come up with funny stuff nonstop. So I guess I should get used to that.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts on your part about the elevator?
No, I just loved it. And I hope that the feedback was as such as well.
Yeah, I think some of the people thought we were both crazy for doing this, but we are. So there's nothing strange about us being.
And again, it was just what I thought a delightful little short, you know.
Sure it is. Okay, this is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. We're discussing the movie of the month with Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival. And the Garden State Film Festival, the next one's in March, so it's a bit far out, but there's a lot going on now, isn't there?
Yes. The dates for next year are March 27th through the 30th. And our call for entries is open right now. So if you know a filmmaker, a script writer, or a musician, composer, please send them to gsff.org.
And that means if you know somebody that likes to make movies like The Elevator, where else is this guy going to, somebody who produces something like this, going to really get any serious attention? But there's some real talent here, and who knows what the next movie this person will make is. And we get to support a creative person, and that's a really important thing in our country today, isn't it?
Well, again, it speaks to, you know, resources are not all monetary. I mean, we have to feed our souls and our creative inclinations as well as our, you know, as well as our bodies with food, et cetera. So, you know, feeding your soul is just as important and good for mental health, you know?
It sure is. And encouraging people to be creative. I am not awfully creative, but I appreciate it. And so therefore, I sort of like hanging around with people who are.
Well, that's how you got me. So
it is true. You know, we've seen each other once in our lives.
Yeah.
We've been working together for how many years?
It's 7 or 8 now. It'll be 8 in October or November. Yeah.
And if two goofy people like us can get together and do something helpful, useful, who knows who else can do it?
Enriching. I'd like to think enriching.
Good word. We're enriching. I like that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Diane, for another great film. Thank you for being such a great member of the Front Lines of Freedom team. I'm so glad we're working
together.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You reported for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some push-ups this time. How about 64? I want you Ranger ready. Then stand at ease. When considering precious metals investments, credibility is paramount. That's why I chose Universal Coin and Bullion. They have a long-standing reputation in the industry that instills confidence in investors. Plus, the company's president, Dr. Mike Fulgens, is recognized as America's gold expert by his peers and the U.S. government, and was named Dealer of the Year by the American Numismatic Association. Call 800-UCB-GOLD or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Front Lines of Freedom. Groups, I do some coin collecting. Universal Coin was the Dealer of the Year for the American Numismatic Association. It's a great place to go for coins and a great place to go to purchase gold and silver. I encourage you to join me by going to universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny and find out what your options are. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at Denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. What's the first one, Skip?
Well, Colonel, Suzanne, whose husband served in Vietnam, remembers back when one could believe the news. She said that she has no valid source now.
Suzanne, there are clearly a number of new sources that have been created in the past year that I believe are pretty darn good. Check them out, but I understand your problem.
And Juan, not a vet, but politically active citizen, really appreciates your show.
Thanks, Juan. We work hard to share some facts and opinions, and we make it clear which are facts and which are opinions. Okay, it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, on 3 July 1775, George Washington rode out in front of our troops gathered at Cambridge, Massachusetts, and drew his sword, formally taking command of the Continental Army. Washington, a prominent farmer and a veteran of the French and Indian War, was appointed Commander-in-Chief by the Continental Congress 2 weeks before. In agreeing to serve as commander, he declined to accept payment for his services beyond reimbursement of future expenses.
Now there's a commander. And on 2 July 1776, the Continental Congress passed a resolution saying that, quote, these United Colonies are and ought to be free and independent states, end quote.
And on 4 July 1776 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the Continental Congress adopted the Declaration of Independence, which proclaimed the independence of a new United States of America from Great Britain and its king. And this, following Revolutionary War, permitted us to be a free and independent nation.
Now, the 2nd of July, 1807, in the wake of the Chesapeake incident, where the crew of a British frigate boarded an American ship and forcibly removed four suspected deserters, President Thomas Jefferson ordered all British ships to vacate U.S. territorial waters.
And on 1 July 1863, during the Civil War, Union and Confederate forces collided at Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. The battle lasted 3 days and ended with a Confederate retreat. General Lee planned a northern invasion. His army, about 80,000, began moving on June 3. The Union army of 100,000 began moving shortly thereafter, staying between Lee and Washington, D.C. On June 28, George Meade assumed the Union command. Lee's army then moved into Pennsylvania. On July 1, advanced units of the forces made contact with one another just outside of Gettysburg. The sound of battle attracted other units, and by noon, the conflict was raging. The Confederates applied pressure all along the Union front, and they slowly drove the Yankees through the town. The Federal troops rallied on high ground on the southeastern edge of Gettysburg. As more troops arrived, Meade's army formed a three-mile-long fishhook-shaped line running from Culp's Hill along Cemetery Ridge to the base of Little Round Top. The Confederates held Gettysburg and stretched along a six-mile arc around the Union position. Lee's forces continued to batter the Union positions before launching the infamous Pickett's Charge against the Union center on July 3. This resulted in the Confederates' retreat.
And on 1 July 1898, during the Spanish-American War, our 5th Corps attacked El Carney and San Juan Hill on Cuba. In May, 1 month after the war began, a Spanish fleet docked in Santiago Harbor after racing across from Spain. Then our naval force arrived and blocked the harbor. In June, our 5th Corps landed to march to Santiago and then to launch a coordinated land and sea assault on Santiago. Our ground troops included the Theodore Roosevelt-led Rough Riders, a collection of Western cowboys and Eastern blue bloods officially known as the 1st U.S. Volunteer Cavalry. They fought to Santiago's outer defenses and on the 1st of July attacked El Carney and San Juan Hill. Shafter hoped to capture El Carney before besieging the fortified heights of San Juan Hill, but the 500 defenders held off our attacks for most of the day. Although El Carney was not yet secure, we pressed toward San Juan Hill. The force split up to take San Juan Hill and Kettle Hill. The Rough Riders were among those attacking Kettle Hill. The Rough Riders, without horses, led the charge. They and the black soldiers of the 9th and 10th Cavalry Regiments were the first up Kettle Hill, and San Juan Hill was taken soon thereafter. Then we found ourselves overlooking our major objective, Santiago, and the next day the siege of the city began. On July 3rd, the Spanish fleet was destroyed by our naval fleet, and on July 17th, the Spanish surrendered the city and Cuba to us.
And on 3 July 1968, during the Vietnam War, our command in Saigon released figures showing that more Americans were killed during the first 6 months of 1968 than in all of 1967. This was a direct result of the heavy fighting that had occurred from the communist Tet Offensive. The offensive began on January 30, when communist forces attacked Saigon, Hue, and many regional capitals. The attacks caught us completely off guard, but eventually we turned the tide. Militarily, this offensive was a disaster for the communists. By the end of March 1968, they'd not achieved any of their objectives and had lost 32,000 soldiers. We'd suffered 3,900 dead. South Vietnamese, 5,000. Over 14,000 South Vietnamese civilians died. Though the offensive was a crushing military defeat for the bad guys, early reports of a smashing communist victory went largely uncorrected in U.S. news media. This created a great psychological victory for the communist.
I was there for that, and all of that happened. And that's military history. And now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now, more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, it was late night in Eureka, California, when a group of rowdy individuals were asked to be quiet so the neighborhood could get some sleep. The homeowner who made the request from his porch was then accosted by the group. He used pepper spray to escape into his house. The hostile group followed him inside, where the man retrieved his firearm. The homeowner shot and killed one home invader and wounded another. The rest of the invaders fled the scene. The homeowner then called the police, who were able to round up the rest of the gang and place them in custody. No charges were filed against the homeowner.
Thanks, Colonel. Sir Edward Coke, a famous 17th century jurist, coined the following phrase, "A man's home is his castle." And apparently, that's still true, even in the liberal state of California, which is not known to be overly friendly to private firearm ownership. After reading the details of this altercation, it's obvious to me that this California man did everything he could to reasonably escape harm and thereby avoid using deadly force. First, he used his voice and asked the people to leave. They refused. It's good that he remained on the porch, as going out to the lawn or the street would have put him in even more danger. Perhaps the only other thing he could have done was to lock himself inside his home and call police instead of trying to deal with it himself. This was probably the man's safest option. Second, when they accosted him on his own front porch, he used a less than lethal defense. This demonstrated to the police that he didn't want to use deadly force and made it more likely to be ruled by police as justifiable self-defense. And third, when the pepper spray didn't work, he wisely retreated inside his home where he had the legal protection of Castle Doctrine Law. The legal threshold for use of deadly force inside your home is much lower than on your porch or on your own lawn. Whenever possible, do not leave the safety of your home when hostile people are on your property. You are safer legally and physically inside your house. And finally, he was able to get his gun quickly while being chased by violent attackers. This tells me that he had the gun readily accessible either in a quick, open gun safe or on his person. All in all, this California man did a great job defending himself and his family. He showed both restraint and wisdom, as well as courage and determination. Frontlines of Freedom salutes him and wishes him all the best as he continues to protect and defend the ones he loves.
He did a great job. Our movie of the month is The Elevator. We just reviewed it. You can still go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link and watch it for free. It's funny. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, Medal of Honor recipient Jim McLuhan will discuss our wonderful nation. Then we'll discuss the death in Iraq of Navy SEAL Dave Warson. Congressman Don Bacon will discuss our nation's challenges. And Navy vet Teresa Robinson will introduce another female veteran. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And now it's available in Spanish. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans. And do get active in correcting our nation. Check out what you can do by going to Concerned Veterans for America and see what they offer you. Go to cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Be sure to fully celebrate our nation's birthday on the 4th of July. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.